Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of House Guest, the podcast about all things related to the House of the Good Shepherd, a retirement community in Hackettstown, New Jersey. I'm Sue Lanza, the CEO, and I'm joined today by my co-host, the Reverend Sean Carty, who is our chaplain. Please enjoy. Good afternoon, Sean. How are you this afternoon?
I'm very well. How are you, Sue?
I'm doing amazingly well.
Good.
And I'd like to say hi, and this is episode number 12.
Is it 12 or an even dozen now?
An even dozen.
Imagine that.
Yeah, wait till we get to a baker's dozen.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. Lucky 13 then.
We have a wonderful topic today that I know most podcasts are not covering, so I'm feeling great about this topic.
Oh, really? What is it?
Chaplaincy at the House of the Good Shepherd. I'm wondering if you have any vital information about this.
I may have a thing or two to say about this. Yes,
yeah.
In fact.
Well,
yes.
Good. This will be interesting because I know I'm going to learn a little bit because I know some, but I know I don't know all. And can you start out by maybe telling us and defining actually what a chaplain is? I know you like to have things defined.
Well, you know, I love words. And
words.
So, the word chaplain comes from chapel, of course. And the distinction here is that a chapel is different from a church.
I'm learning stuff already.
Now you know. So a chapel typically is a very specific, limited ministry. So a church is kind of a general purpose church, general purpose ministry. It's in a town. It's got all kinds of people coming to it, coming and going. A chapel tends to be very specific. So it's for particular places. You might, for example, have a chapel and a chaplain at a camp. Or in a hospital, or at a retirement community.
Okay,
like
yeah.
So that's what we're doing in terms of the chaplaincy here. You and I should mention, folks, I don't know if they'll hear the difference or not, but we're actually recording this in the chapel today.
I know, so there's some interesting echoes.
It does
I don't
sound
know
a
if they're ghosts or
I
what
think.
They are, but yeah.
The words I would use to describe what chaplains do that is different from, say, a parish priest, and we can talk more about some of the other terms that we might be using today. But a chaplain is someone who's generally available all the time and is present in a particular place. And whereas a parish priest might be going here and there and all kinds of other places, I'm here. As a chaplain at the House of the Good Shepherd, I'm here. And while I do have other things that I do in terms of ministry and in congregations around this area, my primary ministry is here at the House of the Good Shepherd as the chaplain.
And it's not only you just doing services in the chapel. I know when you say you're here, it means that should someone have a need at an off hour, someone's actively dying or a family member is in crisis because of something, you're available to counsel them, talk to them. So it's really a very special situation for us.
Yeah, and my position is unusual in some ways because a little bit like you, I'm just on call all the time.
Yeah, isn't it great? You just have a free second.
In fact, I think the two of us, our mobile numbers are the only sort of public ones among the...
Yeah, they're all over the place.
The residents, whereas other staff, not necessarily, but they do get called occasionally for things.
So what do you attribute, or how would you maybe define further, what is the role, let's say, here of the chaplain? Because it obviously would be different in a camp setting or a hospital might be similar, but I'd like to hear more about how you view it.
Right. So in terms of the work that I do here, again, just to sort of define some of the terms, I'm a priest and I serve in the Episcopal Church as a priest in that particular denomination, which is the denomination that's founded the House of the Good Shepherd back in the 1880s, as we know. My particular role as a priest is to be someone who has a ministry of what we would say is word and sacrament. So preaching, teaching, things like that, and then sacramental ministry. We don't do baptisms here much. We do celebrate the Eucharist, and we do have occasionally funeral services and things like that. Those rituals that we do, those are the kind of two particular things in the ministry of a priest, word and sacrament. Being here, it's not necessarily a requirement for the chaplain to be a priest. In fact, my predecessor was a deacon who had a different role in terms of within the church. What you can do as a deacon is different from what you can do as a priest. The big difference really being that a priest can celebrate Holy Communion, whereas deacons don't typically.
Oh, okay. That's not part of their curious. Work. I was glad you defined that.
In terms of my work being a chaplain here, what I would identify as really two things that I would point to is one is that I'm a person of prayer, and that gets expressed in terms of both leading chapel services and on occasion, for example, when we've had a gathering in memory of 9/11 last year. My role in that situation was to be the person who led prayers, which I would make a distinction between being a person who leads prayers and being a person of prayer. What I would say is that pretty much anybody can lead prayers, but being a person of prayer is being someone who's grounded in that spiritual reality. It's hard to nail down the words on these things, but being someone who is prayerful in the context of other things, even if I'm not leading a prayer. I would hope, for example, when I'm part of, say, a staff meeting or some other kind of thing we do here, just by being present, that I would be thought of in that sort of prayerful sense. Whether I'm actually leading a prayer or not, that's just part of my presence in that. The other thing I would say is to support the spiritual lives of those who are here. And I want to be pretty clear about this because I don't assume, and I know for a fact, that not everybody here is an Episcopalian.
Correct.
Not everybody here is even a Christian.
That is also correct.
And not everybody here is necessarily a person of faith of any particular kind.
Right.
But my job, as I see it, in my role as chaplain, is to support people in whatever their spiritual life may be. For some people, that's very traditional. It's, I want to go to chapel services. I want to receive Holy Communion. I want to be part of Bible studies. And that's wonderful. But there are plenty of folks within the house for whom that is not the way they would define their own spiritual life. And we often, those of us in the clergy, talk about folks who are spiritual but not religious. And that's a phrase that comes up frequently. If you read publications that churches and clergy read, people who are spiritual but not religious, which is a growing segment of the American population. And I'm just aware of that. The point being that everybody has a spiritual life of some sort, whether they acknowledge it or not. They may or may not be religious. They may not belong to a church. They may not practice their spirituality in a way that looks conventional, the way that we might think of.
Right, organized in some fashion
exactly.
Or part of a group.
Yeah, exactly. So for my role to be able to support people in whatever it is that they find meaningful, and I am not here, I should point out, I'm not here as an evangelist. That's a very different ministry. I am.
That sounds a little scary, actually.
Well, and that word gets used. Oh, my goodness, that word is handled and mishandled for so long that it's almost embarrassing, frankly, for the church. But at its heart, evangel means good news. So, you know, from that standpoint, I would like to think it's a word we could maybe be able to reclaim. But I'm not here to try and convert people. You know, when somebody calls me, when I get called to be with somebody who's nearing death, my job is not to try and convert them to a particular set of beliefs.
Right.
That's not the role. That's not my job. And it would be a violation of my own sense of integrity as a priest, I would say, unless the person wanted to. And that's, again, I'm supporting that person's particular spiritual life. And that, I should point out, we can talk a little more about this, but it includes both the residents, but also the staff.
And I think that's been important for people to know that there's a safe place to have some conversations. I know you and I have had some that are completely off the record. I say they're under the veil of chaplaincy, and you're probably like, oh my gosh, get rid of this lady.
Well, we sometimes in the church, we talk about things that are under the stole, which means the stole is that vestment that I wear in a chapel service. Traditionally, it's what the priest wears when hearing a confession, for example.
Yeah.
But there's an understanding that you can speak to me and I won't be spreading it around. I sometimes tell people I get paid to keep my mouth shut.
Ah, that's true. So I know a little bit about your background, but I know that the listeners would be interested to hear about your background and that what in your background led you to become a chaplain and eventually come to the house.
I've been in some form of parish pastoral ministry for the last 25 years. Was ordained first in the United Methodist Church, and that's the tradition I grew up in, and served in that church for a number of years in a congregation. And then at some point, I found myself feeling really drawn into the life of the Episcopal Church and finding that I felt more at home in that. So for the last couple decades, I've been at this. I'm serving mostly in parishes, congregations through the years, and have really felt called to that work through the years, being in particular congregation at particular time. There have been, I would say, three congregations that I, as I look back, that really were the ones that I had a long enough relationship that that's what my work focused on as a parish priest. Over the years, though, I've had other experiences in terms of being, say, a chaplain at a camp. I've also done some ministry in terms of retreats and managing a retreat house nearby here.
Yeah.
2020 in February, as you know well, because you were here before me,
yes,
the chaplain before me retired, and you found yourself looking around for a new chaplain, and the timing was right for me to be able to come here. Bringing some of that background as a parish priest into this particular place has been a rather interesting journey because it's required some translation. This is not a parish. There's a lot that I don't do that a parish priest would be doing.
Like, can you give us a for instance?
Some fundraising, for example.
I don't
tend to do any of that here.
That's true.
I also, in a parish, I would be working with a church council or a vestry, and that's not the role here.
That is also true.
I actually have a boss.
Yeah. Ooh.
And I sometimes will joke with people that I actually have several bosses. I've got my boss here at the house. I've also got a bishop. And then, of course, there's God who's in the picture as well.
True. You're surrounded.
Exactly. Yeah. The one thing that I would say is probably the closest parallel in my background to the work I do here is something that most clergy are required to do. It's called clinical pastoral education.
Ooh.
We often refer to it as CPE. That's one of those acronyms I know.
I did not know that.
Exactly. Clinical pastoral education is a program where clergy in training typically spend about 3 or 4 months in a hospital setting.
Oh.
And so for a 3 or 4 month period, I was resident or a chaplain intern in a hospital. This was in Washington State, where I'm originally from. Learned about what does it mean to engage people wherever they are spiritually. And it's a really wonderful program that kind of pulls you apart and then puts you back together.
Oh, wow.
And there are other examples of those in other professions. But in my case, CPE, clinical pastoral education, really helped me clarify what it is that I bring when I walk into the room of a patient, for example, in a hospital or here at the house in one of our residence rooms or in a group meeting or something like that. I've had that experience. And as you know, I've also been surrounded by medical people in my family. So
yeah.
The irony of me taking a position in a medical place and then a pandemic hitting 6 weeks later is not lost on me.
No, definitely not.
I've often thought God had a sense of humor in having that happen.
Yeah, I'm so grateful that the timing worked out and you came because we needed you so desperately. Mm. We didn't know, but we did need you. I'm just curious if I could go back to your piece that you said about your education that you did in Washington State. Can you elaborate a little bit on what some of the things are that you said they pulled you apart and put you back together again? I'm just curious. I'm thinking about, you know, when you go become an administrator, you have to go through these internships and all this other stuff. And it's kind of grueling because you have to do it while you're working a full-time job. And
exactly.
It's not fun and it's not paid. And wondered if you could elaborate a little bit so we could understand.
Yeah, it's an interesting process. In my case, I actually chose a place that was both a hospital and a hospice attached to it. A residential hospice as well as in-home hospice care. And that was intentional on my part. I was very interested in that particular work. I find the whole question of death to be a very interesting one. It's something I get to be face to face with professionally, have experienced personally as well. Both of my parents died before I turned 40. So I've had that experience. I think that's absolutely critical for anybody who does the work that we do here to be able to face that with some reality. The thing I would say about clinical pastoral education in terms of how it takes you apart and puts you back together is that it requires you to look really deep in yourself and ask, who am I and what am I doing here? One of the things that clergy learn very quickly, if they're paying attention, is that when they walk into the room of a hospital patient, let's just say that for example, I don't bring medication. I don't bring any therapeutic surgical technique.
Right.
I don't bring anything that's going to fix anything.
Yeah, you don't have answers necessarily of some sort.
Exactly. And well, I might have some inklings of what somebody might be dealing with, but I'm not there to fix things. It's really, to go back to a word I think I used earlier, but to be present and to be able to say to someone, you're not alone in this situation. I'm here, but also, depending on the person, God is present in this particular situation. Learning how to face things like that without always reaching for some sort of fix. And that's where, for example, I don't come from the medical side of it. So I don't necessarily come in with a clinical perspective. I come in from a spiritual side and say, okay, what are the resources here to this person spiritually that will help them, you know, face whatever it is that they're facing?
Yeah.
Can I encourage them in a direction where they know that they've got those resources and can draw upon them, as opposed to I come in with my tool bag and I'm going to fix things? That's a very different kind of perspective on it. I also learned, and I found this throughout the years, but I've also learned that sometimes people make assumptions about chaplains, one of which is that if there's a patient that everybody can't figure out what to do with, they call the chaplain.
Oh my gosh. Usually they call the administrator too. So well, just so those, you know, I get that call too.
You get those calls too.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, we can't fix this situation. So who could...
Maybe God will help us.
Maybe. I will say that it is an absolute privilege to be present with people in whatever part of their life that they're facing challenges or joyful moments too. It's a very different perspective. Again, I don't come in to fix things. I'm in there to be companion, to be a present to the person, to encourage them to be able to see clearly. Sometimes that is helpful. You and I had this conversation elsewhere, but one of the things we sometimes talk about is steering towards the pain.
Right. And yes.
So many of us, and this is a distinctly American thing, we want everything to be sunshine and flowers, and that is just not the way life is.
No, it's not at all. You do have to face some of your demons in order to heal yourself or grow to a next level within your own spirituality or just your general growth as a human being. And in order to do that, you have to really take some hard looks at yourself, and it's not pleasant.
Yeah. I might recommend at this point a podcast I could recommend.
Oh, my.
It's called Everything Happens.
Everything Happens.
And it's a young woman named Kate Bowler, who teaches at Duke University and is a historian, teaches in the seminary there as well. She wrote a book titled Everything Happens. If you look at the book, the cover, it says Everything Happens for a Reason, and then the words for a reason are all scratched out. And
I love that.
She's also got a more recent book titled There's No Cure for Being Human. But her podcast, Everything Happens, is well worth listening to. At a very young age, I think in her 30s, with a young child, was diagnosed with cancer, a severe, scary kind of cancer, I think chronic as well. So it's something she's been dealing with. But what she faced in the midst of all of that, and I shouldn't speak for her, but would encourage people to find her podcast, is that, you know, no amount of positive thinking was going to overcome any of that.
Right.
Her desire in her books, in her podcasts, in her conversations that she have is to be as honest as possible, to say, yeah, this stinks.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are some other things to pay attention to here.
Yeah.
And to be really honest about that. I find that refreshing because so much of particularly American culture is very cheerful and positive
Right.
And, you know, sometimes that's just not the way life is.
No, especially not when you're coming and counseling people when they're maybe on their deathbed or facing some other challenge, like you mentioned earlier about being present for someone. And sometimes that just means sitting there in silence. And I know silence makes us very uncomfortable, many of us, but sometimes it's so powerful to have somebody just sit there with you.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
Thanks for that. That was a good little diversion that we took there.
Yeah.
So tell us about how you actually support the spiritual lives of our residents, which, I mean, I see you doing this all the time, but give me all the ways or many of the ways that you do that.
Some of it is very conventional. We have chapel services Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday.
So right.
That's a lot of chapel services.
It's a lot.
We have a couple of Bible studies that happen. So much of it's very conventional, and I enjoy those very much. The other parts, though, are very informal. You know, there are residents that will catch me in the hall and they'll ask me a question or two, and then we might have a longer conversation elsewhere. Sometimes it's at those critical, we would call threshold moments.
That's a good way to put it.
Somebody who's coming into the community of the House of the Good Shepherd or potentially dying. Or the death of a spouse or the death of a child even.
Yes.
You know, those kinds of things, those threshold moments. We sometimes talk about those. There's a phrase called liminal space. You're in that place between here and there. And like a threshold on a door, like I was saying.
Yeah.
You're not exactly in the room, but you're not exactly out of it. And how do you navigate in those moments? And I think that's one way I try to support folks, residents in their spiritual lives with that. I think also just being present. One of the things I know from my own work is that I'm one of the handful of people that residents know I have time for to talk to. I mean, that's my job.
Right. They do know that. Yeah.
You know, whereas somebody who's working in the kitchen or in maintenance, I will say that we have staff here is fantastic. They will take time to talk with residents.
Sure. Oh, I've seen it all the time.
Yeah. That's my job. Whereas if your job is to get dinner
right.
you know, on the plate into the dining room, you may not have the time to talk at the moment. And maybe you do it later. But my job generally is to be present and be available for people. So I think that's a big part of it. I also find in terms of residents being supportive for their families as well. You and I have talked a number of times about how COVID has been very different in all of our lives. But for me in particular, one of the things in the 2 years I've been here, I've only had occasion to lead a memorial service 3 times.
Yeah, I know. I found that so interesting when you pointed that out.
Because we just haven't been gathering the way that we would normally. I would have expected probably to do that every month.
Every month.
If we were in sort of normal times.
Sure.
And the other thing is that not one of those has happened actually in the chapel. They've all
either
been.
That is so strange.
We did one outside and we've done a couple offsite.
There was one upstairs that you led for about a staff member.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, that, you know, there are different things that are our situation and COVID have made it very hard. You know, we do what we can. And I've learned to be able to lead a chapel service with absolutely nobody else in the chapel.
I know. That's become one of your talents, right?
On TV. I will say, though, that I do have somebody sometimes in the chapel with me, and that's my dog, Ranger, who frequently will wander about the chapel and
say, what's happening here?
Exactly. He'll hear some sound in the hallway and go investigate that and then be back and fall asleep in front of the altar while I'm preaching a sermon or something. But those are all ways that I support the residents. I think just being present to them and being available.
Oh, yeah. The availability is huge. Some of the things that you didn't mention that maybe are unique just to you as chaplain, there's some of your creative skills that have nothing to do with chaplaincy or spiritual work necessarily, although all creative endeavors have a spiritual side to them, I would say.
Absolutely, yes.
But you put together our newsletter. We try to give you things to put in it, but I know you have to somehow cram it together. And for having it available, especially when we would look at some of those newsletter, I was going to say episodes, but newsletter editions, and we would marvel at the fact that we felt like we were locked down here in prison during some of the dark days of COVID. But in reality, when you look at that newsletter, it's showing a completely different side. Like, there is life here. We're doing lots of things despite everything.
Mm-hmm.
So for that, I'm very grateful. I also know that you have a literary bug and you love words and you love quoting, and you give us, for our morning meeting, we have a Zoom call with all of our administrative staff, and you always help us by ending it with a quote every day. And it's so nice to have that, because you usually try to fit it around something that's happened, or just sometimes it's a day when everybody's down and you help lift us up. The other thing that you do is, back to the literary piece, is that you help by having some reading of books together, a book club group, TV, and also in person. It's just expanded the activities that we have here, and it's appreciated.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I will say one of the things, and this was a delightful discovery for me, but because of COVID and because we've not been able to gather in groups, one of the things kind of early on we decided was that we'd use the chapel camera and TV channel as best we could.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I came up with was just reading to the residents. And so we've read a number of different books. We read A Christmas Carol last year, just before Christmas. I've read in some cases, children's books. I've just finished reading Winnie the Pooh, which is a delightful book. And as the residents here know, I believe that children's books are not just for children. There's plenty for us to get out of them. The other book that we just finished reading not too long ago was All Creatures Great and Small.
Oh, it's another great book. Oh, my gosh. I almost can't watch that when it's on TV because some of it is just too sad with the animals.
I know.
I'm such a mush with those animals. I know. And it's like, I would love to watch it and I love the heartwarming parts, but please, no animals that are getting upset with anything.
Yeah.
So crazy.
Yeah.
But just reading to the residents has been, I didn't expect it. I really enjoyed it. I know that not all residents tune in, obviously, but the few that do, I do hear from them and they I really enjoyed it. And I have to be careful sometimes when I'm picking books for that because I've tried picking a couple books that were humorous. I just got laughing so hard I couldn't read.
And then, gosh.
You know, then it sort of defeats the purpose, but at least it's entertaining.
It's entertaining for sure. Well, that's what you do for our residents, but there's this whole other side, the fact that we're lucky enough to have a full-time chaplain here. Like I said, we've needed you during these last 2 years. You picked a great 2 years to come. I really appreciate your forethought. Mm-hmm. But tell us some of the stuff that you have done for the staff. I can speak for myself, knowing that you've been someone that's listened to me. And when I have other people that I really can't share some of these things with, mm-hmm. and you've been there to help me through some challenging time. So I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, we've all been through some challenging times the last 2 years, no doubt. I think one of the things that I've discovered being here, I didn't expect it, but that my work here would include the staff. I don't know why I didn't expect that. I should have, but just learning that there are just some wonderful staff here. I just have to say that there are staff here who give and give and give, deeply care about our residents.
Without a doubt. We've talked in other podcasts about how people go to the nth degree to please our residents. And some of them have family, some of them don't. It doesn't matter. They're there to try to give them whatever the little moment that they need right then and there. We're not just talking about hugs.
Right.
We're talking about special things that they do that are just a little bit above and beyond taking that extra second to do it. Yeah. I guess that's probably what you're talking about too.
It is. And just so wanting to support the staff in that work because I have to be careful how I say this, but this is not a particular work area that is highly paid. I think unfortunately it's our society doesn't value the work of caring for our seniors as much as it should. Let me say that. But that I can be supportive and encouraging of those who are working here and doing really remarkable work in so many different ways. I also think one thing that people may or may not know is that we staff really take it to heart when, for example, one of our residents dies. That is a stress that it doesn't show up on any chart anywhere.
No, there's no chart for that.
And so trying to be encouraging for people as they face those difficult things, but also in some very happy moments too. I mean, we've had a couple births here.
I know.
Children of staff.
Not here, not in the building.
Not in the building, right. But celebrating those and being able to delight in the joy of that. And
yeah.
As you mentioned, I've been doing the thought for the day at the end of our morning meeting.
Yes.
And I've got a whole collection of quotes now.
You sure do. You can trot them out.
Exactly.
You can recycle them. We won't notice.
I do that with sermons maybe occasionally too, but try to be present in that way for staff. And one of the things I remember experiencing in my work as a parish priest was very often it was hard to track down parishioners and just have a cup of coffee. People are unbelievably busy in this world that we live in.
Sure.
Here, because I'm just here and I happen to bump into people, a quick, how are you doing today? Well, and just, you know, in the tone of the voice.
Right. You know right away that you need a little intervention.
They're carrying something heavy and need perhaps to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah.
And it may only be a 3-minute conversation, but I'd like to think it helps out for our staff. Just knowing that they're being supported in their work. And that's interesting. I've noticed, maybe just because I'm looking for it a little bit more in my reading, but chaplains are coming up in different places that you might not expect. So, for example, corporations in sometimes are now employing chaplains.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, they realize that there's a value to have somebody around who can talk and kind of engage in those things that are not necessarily. The military's had chaplains for very long
That's
time.
That's true. You're right.
Because when you're on a ship in the middle of the sea, you need a naval chaplain to be there.
Definitely.
You know, be able to speak to whatever the spiritual concerns are of those folks who are deployed in that.
It's funny that you say that about having a chaplain in those situations for someone to talk to, like even in a corporation. I've often thought, and I'm sure somebody will say, oh, brother, I've often thought we should have a psychologist on staff for, you know, in a larger place, just so there's a safe place to go. And like HR, you know, human resources sometimes fills that role, or sometimes our social worker, or you fill that role as the chaplain. Right. Sometimes I do as an administrator, but everybody needs that place that's safe to go to. And you just know, I know my daughter will tell me this a lot. She'll say, Mom, this is one of those times when you're not supposed to try to fix it or tell me anything. You just sit and listen. Say, oh, okay, honey, thanks for, maybe you could tell me at the beginning of the conversation, give me a wave or something.
Isn't it wonderful when our children have that wisdom?
Oh, they are just great. But I really feel it's important that people have some place that's a safe place that they know that they can go and just vent for 3 minutes or whatever it is, and feel comfortable that that information is safe and not going anywhere.
Yeah.
So what do you see as the future here of chaplaincy? Because I'm sure you've looked around, we've talked, let's say, in terms of some of the things the chaplain needs, like we want to have a better sound system. Who knew we needed even a better TV system and stuff? But I'm not even talking about the physicality of it. What do you see for the future for us here?
Well, I think it's probably important for us to acknowledge that it's unusual for a place like this to have a full-time chaplain. And so I give a lot of credit to you and to the board and others who have supported that, because I do think there's a value to the work.
Definitely. It's paid off in spades, and especially during this critical time.
Yeah. And again, it's one of those things that doesn't necessarily show up on some balance sheet someplace.
No.
But I think there's a quality to the place that is special. We talk about that all the time. But I'd like to think chaplaincy is part of that. As I look ahead, I can see this work as chaplain being something that continues to grow. I think it would be wonderful, for example, if we were able to do something like what I experienced with that clinical pastoral education. And in fact, we do have some volunteers who help. Again, COVID has really restricted that. But
yeah,
we do have one volunteer. Her name is Annie, and I want to give her credit here. Mm. We have continued with our Bible study, which she would have come for in person, but we've continued doing it on phone, over the phone, using a conference call. Our residents have been troopers with that, trying to navigate. How do you do this? How do you have a phone call with six or eight people on it? Annie has been one of those people who has really helped out. In a sense, she's kind of almost had an internship here in the work that she's done. And I can see that being something for the future of chaplaincy here. I definitely think that there's something to be said about being able to meet in groups when that's appropriate. I could see, for example, a spirituality group for staff.
That's a good one. Just to talk about what do you define it as, and how does it look to you?
Exactly. Not necessarily even in the chapel, but to have it in some other place. As you know, this chapel we're sitting in right now, recording this, gets used for a lot of things.
It sure does.
Particularly during COVID, and particularly during some of the construction and renovations that we're experiencing just at the moment. So the chapel is a place that's a hospitable place, and I'd like to think that's part of the chaplaincy work as well.
To have open doors for whatever. So I think the residents in independent living were so surprised when you opened your doors and said, it's okay, you can have your meeting here, and you can even have happy hour. I think they all fell over with that. I thought they thought you were going to have like some list of rules you were going to hand out, and they were going to be sitting in corners or something. Yeah. It was just so funny, and they were fine. Like, we even had a Christmas Eve, you had services, and then we followed right outside with a little gathering, and it was really very charming and sweet. It was very nice. Yeah, but the more we can look to use the chapel for other things, it brings everybody back together.
Yeah, it does. And I think you also know that there's a role that I have here that transcends just being in one department. That's an incredibly important perspective that the chaplain has. I'm a department of one, as you know, we've talked about that.
Yes.
But I am not somebody who only focuses on a particular area of the house. I focus on the whole place. As chaplain, I get to be connected with skilled nursing residents and with independent living residents, with staff, with families, everybody, the board even.
Yeah, and so you give the prayer at our board meetings and you've talked to the board. You know some of the board members who are Episcopalian clergy. And you even, I forgot to mention some other important thing that people don't know about you. You have taken under your wing various plants that are half dead. And some of them are a little scary looking, honestly. And I'm a plant lady, but wow, I don't know what you're doing in here.
Well, yeah, the chapel has become a kind of a hospital for houseplants.
It has.
The number of times people have said to me, oh, I've got this houseplant, but I just can't keep it alive. Well, okay, I'll take
it. All right, we'll take you in.
And so it's become a little bit of an orphanage of plants here at the chapel. But so there's a lot of that.
Yeah, but that's good. That's another welcoming piece for you.
The other thing I might just add in terms of the future of the chaplaincy is, and you and I have done a lot of work on this, and including several podcasts, is about the history of this place.
No, I love the history of this place.
You know, there's a writer named Kathleen Norris who, in one of her books, she says that, you know, the church doesn't think in terms of months or years or even decades. We think in terms of centuries and millennia.
Oh, dear.
So for us, you know, history is just part of who we are. And as you know from our previous conversations and podcasts, the history of this place and its roots in the Episcopal Church. And, you know, yes, I'm an Episcopal priest, and I hope that that connection will long be celebrated and continued, because I think that it's in the DNA of this place. Whether or not any of our residents are Episcopalians, as it is, you know, there's some, but not a whole lot.
Not a whole lot.
But being able to engage people with some of that history and make sure that they know our past. So
definitely. Well, Sean, any closing thoughts? Because you've given us a lot to think about here, and I learned a lot.
Yeah, I don't know that I have anything more to add. I think I've
that's okay.
Said
that's
most
okay.
of what I can say.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I'm Sue.
And I'm Sean.
And we want to thank you for joining us for another episode of House Guests. See you next time. Thank you. Thanks for listening to this episode of House Guests, the podcast which is dedicated to all great things about the House of the Good Shepherd, a retirement community in Hackettstown, New Jersey. To learn more about us, please visit our website, hotgs.org. Thanks for listening. See you next time.